Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, who's down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Ed Rudell next to me in studio here, and Cal Carson as well, who's running the board. We got a great program continuing for you. In this particular hour, we're going to be answering questions that you folks have posed and also talking about crack. Not the kind that is the drug, but the kind that is the virus. All that's coming up in the Internet Advisor. Well, it's time for me to hand the podium over to Mr. Ed Rudell, because as we were talking about it off mic, this is the segment that you're going to be contributing to, in particular, talking about this crack problem. Crack being a synonym for, or the...
A synonym for key reinstallation attack.
Key reinstallation attack, yep. Which is something that was discovered a couple weeks ago that has actually been discovered a while further back than that, I think.
Yeah, it was only announced a few weeks
ago. It was announced a few weeks ago, typically. It's a virus that attacks...
No, it's not a virus. It's a vulnerability or
security. Vulnerability. There we go. Yep. That attacks the routers in particular?
It attacks the people that are using routers.
Okay.
You know, well, it's a vulnerability that allows
somebody
to exploit it. Right.
That's the word I was looking for. Yep.
Just for the fun of it, Ed, could you please explain for the layman the difference between a virus and a vulnerability?
Well, a virus is basically something that's embedded on a computer or a tablet or a mobile phone, and it's a piece of software that runs. This vulnerability basically is something that's been discovered in either an operating system and a piece of code that hackers use to actually take advantage of, to bypass security, and then impregnate. Did I say impregnate? Yeah, impregnate it with a virus.
All right.
Trying to think of another insert of virus.
And impregnation. Okay.
Are we sure this is a computer?
This is the Internet Advisor. Yeah. So I mean, and insert a virus on whatever platform they're going on, whether or not it's a server, a phone, a PC, a Mac, or whatever. So that's the difference between a vulnerability. The hackers have to get in. A vulnerability could be something as simple as, using stupid passwords, like password.
That's true. One, two, three,
or using
password.
Default passwords.
So a vulnerability is lack of knowledge and someone found an opportunity they could take advantage of. A virus is they specifically went out
what they can do with that opportunity.
To do something malicious.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good analogy.
By the way, it just is I represent, I guess, the dummies in the audience, the people who don't quite understand. When I heard that this was something that affects routers and Wi-Fi, portals and things like that, I thought, what can I do about that? How can I protect myself if it's already embedded, if this vulnerability is in my Wi-Fi router?
In your Wi-Fi. And that's a good point. The good news is that Microsoft, Apple, the people that discovered this, and that would be Matthew Van Hoff, was it KU Levan? Okay. It sounds almost French, basically of KU Levan. They discovered the vulnerability. They notified the governments. They notified the manufacturers way before they made the public announcement, giving time to Microsoft, Apple, the people of Linux, Cisco, IBM, all these manufacturers, giving them time to develop patches. So Microsoft and Apple released their patches around October 10th, a week before the vulnerability was even announced by the security experts. So that's good.
So this is...
Gary, what are you going to...
Yeah, and also, we don't know, or at least I haven't heard, that there's been anyone that has actually exploited this vulnerability.
No, that's...
They found it, they patched it, without any bad guys doing anything that we know of that has been reported.
Excellent point, Gary. Yeah. The thing is, this is just the cooperation of these researchers to get a hold of the proper people and then make the announcement. They found this vulnerability, and it's really, it's kind of neat how it works. What they do is you know how you, when you're in hotels and you have the ability to walk around the hotel, and when you first register, you may register with the password that they give you at the front desk. Once you do that, you can go through any of the floors. You can go through the casino. Not all hotels have casinos, but you can go all over the place and you're never asked for that password again. Where you're being passed from one wireless router to another wireless router to another wireless router. And when that passover happens, that's the vulnerability. Is when you're walking between these. So what the hackers do is they actually, they're listening to wireless networks. They capture a snippet of the wireless code, which is encrypted, but they know the places because the packets of information on that they gather. They know that this section is the comes from the router. This is the destination, and it's all encrypted. But they know if they just snip this part out and snip another part in. Then what they do is they're basically telling the person as they're walking from one spot to another, they're basically saying, I'm the next wireless router. You can connect to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be just sitting there and someone's listening to your wireless signal.
So it's kind of like the man in the middle attack.
It is a man in the middle attack. And except what they're doing is they're passing themselves off as a wireless router.
Now, guys,
like Gary said, this is all theoretical. There's no practical. There's no... no one's ever run across a virus that took care of this or, you know, arrested anyone for this yet.
Okay. It doesn't look like anybody took advantage of it. But one of the things I heard, and guys, confirm this or deny it for me if you would. I had heard that...
crack kills. That's wrong subject.
if you will, cheaper routers and cheaper Wi-Fi devices that you might get, like a knockoffs, are not as likely to have done the upgrades necessary to protect themselves as would maybe some of the bigger brands like a Linux or an ASUS or one of the other. Does that make sense, guys? Does that sound like it's right?
Well, you know, I'm looking at a website right now, and there are a number of CNET's doing a good job in Windows Central, and they published a list of these are the manufacturers that were notified and have already started releasing updates for their wireless routers. And there's a number of them on here. Cisco Linksys.
Now, these updates are done via a firmware update that you would do to the router.
I would guess, yes.
Correct. But what unclear is whether or not many people get their wireless routers from their cable provider. So are the cable providers pushing wireless updates?
This is still new
to us, and I'm sure they're on top of it. I hope they're on top of it.
Yeah.
But none of us really thought about this. We were thinking about the OSs. We were thinking about the routers, but then all of a sudden, wait a second. What are our cable manufacturers doing?
Yeah, but look at it from this perspective, too. I just thought about this while we were talking. How far back are the manufacturers of routers going? Because if you have an older wireless router, are you going to get a firmware update to close that up? Or if they decided we're not supporting it, so therefore, do you know which ones you need to get rid of and upgrade to a new one or what?
You know, we're going to have to follow up on this.
Yeah.
Really, because it's so new that there's a lot of questions to be answered. My wireless router does automatic updates.
Yep. Well, along those lines, and before the program, Gary and you and I were talking about this, you mentioned the fact that there's a certain amount of vulnerability in the system because people have shut off their automatic updates in a lot of cases.
That's right. And when they're notified, almost nobody, I don't believe any reasonable person would say, no, don't tell me if you have an upgrade. But a lot of people say, no, I'm going to pick and choose the time and the day that I'm going to upgrade because I may be getting on my computer and I need to do something right away and I don't want to be stuck with an inadvertent unscheduled update. So a lot of people do that. What we need to make sure is that if you do say, no, tell me when there's an update, that you go ahead then at the most, you know, at the very first reasonable time that you can, like right away, if possible, then go ahead and do the upgrade manually. But you need to make sure that you stay on top of it. You can't be, you know, waiting 2-3 weeks because a lot of these updates or bug fixes, patches, are security patches.
Now, if you remember years ago, we used to use a wireless security called WEP, W-E-P. And remember, and we thought that was okay until someone actually released a hack that could actually bust it under 60 seconds by continuously throwing information at it and doing something similar. But and now this crack is basically targeting WPA2, which many of us think of as the successor of WEP security. And, you know, we'll see if they're able to have this survive or not, if this WPA2 survives this vulnerability.
Well, let's make sure we understand, too. Nobody's attacking anything, right?
Correct.
This is a good program. It's a good protocol, is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
It's a good protocol. And people are continuing to look at it and to, you know, try to make it the very best it can. And that's by going in and see if they can hack it. And that's what they did. They're not trying to hack the old stuff because who cares? Nobody uses it anymore.
Yeah. Excellent.
Right.
Okay.
As you said, we're going to keep our eye on this because it is still a developing story. But it sounds like it's also important to make sure that you're open to having those updates done and the firmware updates in particular. I'm going to check on that on your modem. Back in just a minute to answer your questions. Hi, Foster Brown here again, along with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. And we are answering questions that you folks have posed. And by the way, the only way that's going to happen when we're doing our podcast versus the live show is that you send us your questions on email. And that's very simply done, going to internetadvisor.net. And then in the upper right-hand corner, you see a Contact Us button. Click on that, and that will allow you to send an email with as generous a description of your problem as you possibly can give. And that's always important. For instance, if you've got a machine that's giving you problems, give us some idea what the operating system is you're running, how old the machine is, you know, some more details so that when it comes time for us to try to unravel the problem you're having, we can take a good shot at that because we haven't got the advantage of having the dialogue that we have when we're doing a program where you're calling in and we can ask follow-up questions. So, but it is the way when we're doing a podcast that you get to have some answers to your questions. So this is a good time for you to get on the email, send us your questions, and then during the week, Cal and Ed and Gary and I will take a crack at answering those questions. And sometimes having a little more time to consider the answers is a good thing, right, Eddie? You get a little...
Yeah, I get to, you know, eat dinner and think about it.
And look up some other information as well. Well, Cal, you have been doing, typically getting people's questions throughout the week. Friends, families, and fellow workers have come to you with their broken devices and say, help, oh guru.
You know, typical to poor Gary Chagrin, I haven't gotten a Mac question all week because, after all, they just work. What can I say? No, I'm just kidding. But I've noticed a phenomenon, which is really weird. And it happened to me this week. And I had at least four people contact me with situations like this. I turned my computer on yesterday and it worked fine. I turned it on today and I've got a black screen and it's not doing anything. And in most cases, of the three of the four cases that I have, all three of them were hard drive problems. And I was like, oh, this is really good. You know, we love hard drive problems because it's always a great mystery with it. And the first thing I do is when I get the machine is I want to take a look at it and see, well, maybe it's just, you know, CMOS. You need to be able to reset that so it'll see the drive and boot right up. And in three of these cases, it wasn't CMOS and the drive wouldn't boot right up. So then my next question is to the person who gave me the computer. Mm-hmm. I think there's a problem with your hard drive for sure. And before I get going on any fixes, do you have a backup?
Uh-huh. And the answer is?
Well, when they have the deer in the headlights look on their face, and they look at you, and they just kind of go with that, or the really intelligent ones will say, what's a backup?
Ooh.
You know you got a problem.
Oops. And to be honest with you, by the way, this week, a woman who was part of a group that I'm involved with brought me her computer, her laptop, a VAIO laptop, by the way, Ed, and fairly recent. Anyway, she said, you know, I've got this problem and things are locked up much the same way as you're talking about. And so when I said, okay, two questions, and one of them was, did you back up your material? Because the simplest thing to do, and she's running system Windows 8.1, is to simply go back to factory settings.
Yep.
So I said, have you backed up the material on it? No. After that deadly pause, and there was that deadly pause that says, we got a problem here, Houston. And it was that she hadn't backed up.
Well,
and so it's going to be a challenge. I've got the first thing I've got to do is try to extract her pictures and documents and things like that.
Of the three that are having this drive problem, I did, on the way to the studio here, get a call from one of them. They said, I found the backup drive.
Hallelujah.
I said, terrific. When was the last time you used it? And they said, when you set it up for me.
Hey.
3 years ago.
Oh, ouch.
Now, good news and bad news. Good news is a lot of the legacy stuff that they had they wanted to keep, specifically things like pictures of her daughter when she graduated from high school and all those neat stuff, are on that backup. So we'll be able to restore those back. But things that happened from 3 years back to now may be off in the vaporware.
Yeah.
Now, I've already started to try and recover it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff is actually coming back. A lot of it is being fought because the drive assembly itself is going,
Literally.
So I told her I'd keep hacking at it and see what I can do to try to get it back for her. But it is, I bring this subject up because every couple of months it happens.
Yep.
People start, you know, having problems with hard drives and they have no way of recovering their data. And it's so important that periodically you got to do a backup.
You know, your sound effects there reminded me that so many computers nowadays are coming with solid state drives.
Oh.
And basically when those go,
Party is over.
The party's over.
Oh, because, yeah, you're right. There's nothing to mechanically boot up again.
That lovely skipping of the record noise that Cal did a few moments ago was was basically the head slapping back and forth trying to find a certain tractor sector, and it goes, you know, and we're used to that.
Yeah, but,
The days of mechanical drives are almost numbered.
That's true.
Yeah, and they're starting to being able to recover some of those SSD drives, but just like with the mechanical drives, how much is that data worth to you?
Yeah.
Because you could have spent $80, got a little external USB drive, plugged it in, and backed up on a regular basis. Or if that data is really important to you, you could spend starting about $600 going up from there to get some company to go in and actually try and get that data.
The people that are coming to you were Mac. These were Macs, or was it a VAIO?
No,
I had the VAIO.
You had the VAIO. Yeah. Are you still using a Surface, Gary? Because if I recall, you basically are using Office 365, and you've touted that basically everything's in the cloud for you.
That's right. I don't keep anything on the Surface, and not because you couldn't, because you certainly can. You use it just like a regular computer if you want to. But why? Right? When the internet is so ubiquitous that just put everything in the cloud. Somebody else back it up for you.
Right, so that's one backup method.
Yeah.
That's right, cloud-based storage. And let's try and clarify that for the novice people out there so they'll know what that means. Cloud-based storage is storage that's done by someone else, some company somewhere that you connect to over the internet with your computer, and they put a program on your computer that periodically goes out, looks at all the files on your computer and says, this one changed, this one changed, this one changed. I'm going to back these ones up.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a backup solution. Gary uses basically cloud-based storage.
His hard drive?
As his hard drive. Do you have a sync folder? Is that how it works, Gary?
Yeah, I don't ever allow anything to be backed up onto the computer itself.
Yeah, you basically back up to the OneDrive, or right. store all your documents to the OneDrive. And if you're not connected to the internet, the next time it does, it Microsoft, because it's a Microsoft OneDrive, it'll basically synchronize everything. And you right. could certainly do that with...
you can do that with Dropbox.
Dropbox,
you can Google.
Yes.
You can Google. Do it with Google. You can do it.
Yep.
And even the backup services that back up your
do
your
the
information,
same basically thing.
They basically
right.
do the same thing.
Right.
They
Crash
go out
Plan.
And pull it. Yeah, Crash Plan, Mosey,
yep.
Carbonite.
Right.
All of those different services are internet services that are backing up your data in the cloud. The difference in what Gary does and those other things that I talked about is that Gary can actually work on that data that's up in the cloud
mm-hmm.
where the other ones are backing it up. So you have to retrieve it, work on it, and then put it back up there.
Right.
So it depends on your – Gary, the key with yours is that it depends on having a good connection to the internet all yeah, the time or whenever you want to use that.
Or it just saves it on my hard drive, and as soon as I connect next time, it'll automatically go up. I turn autosave on. I don't even save my documents anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if a hurricane comes through or something.
Yeah, the computer saves it for me. Why would I need to save it?
You know, and that's sort of...
If it goes away, it saves the very last version, and then when I go back in again or it connects again, then it goes up to the cloud. But this way I can use it on my phone, on my tablet, on my computer, on somebody else's computer, on work computer, or my home computer. It doesn't really matter. I can get to it mm-hmm. anywhere.
You know, and again, this is through OneDrive, right, Ed?
OneDrive, yep.
Well, I was just saying,
it comes with Office 365.
Right.
And so my email is backed up the same way.
I was going to say that what Microsoft has done is with Office 365 is for a fixed dollar per month or a fixed rate per year, Office 365, it does all of that magic that Gary's talking about. And this is one of the things I really thought, you know, wow, that's almost Apple-ish. That's Apple-like. That's something Apple should have done. Does Apple offer a backup solution like that or internet or backup? They offer iCloud backup, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so they do.
So you can do basically the same thing with iCloud that you can do with OneDrive in the Apple environment. And I believe it's the same way with in the Google environment if you happen to have an Android device
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Or even if you don't have an Android device.
Right.
You can go to the was it Google Cloud or, it's just a Google app. I'm just trying to see if I can find it. Anyway, you can save it.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you have an Android device.
It's just called
Google Drive.
Google Drive.
We all had a senior moment there just for an instant. Forgive us.
It's called Google Drive.
Well, you know, I think it was the hard drive. It just kind of moved back. The head sat back for a second, just waited.
I know. I had to pinch myself to pull that piece of information out of my hand. So.
But the important message I'm trying to put out there is this, and that is whether you use the online services, whether you do anything manually as a backup, do some sort of backup somewhere, somehow.
Yeah.
Whether you have it, it's best to do the automated one because you never have to remember to do it, but it comes with a little bit of a price. Or if you're disciplined enough and you can remember to do it yourself, put a little reminder in your calendar, hey, it's time to back up, then you can do it that way. Or the other way is, if you think you need to back up, you probably need to back up. And if you can't remember when you last backed up, you probably need to back up.
And part of that good news is that in many cases, the resources for backing up are free. There's a lot of free stuff on the internet right now. For instance, Google offers you, I don't know how big there's a lot of space. So, matter of fact, Gary, I think with OneDrive, there's a huge amount of space that you're offered up there to store your material. So
yeah, and the price is cheap, so you know, you might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, for nothing, it's real cheap. Coming back to answer more of your questions that you posed here to us on the Internet Advisor in just a moment with our team. So glad that you're joining us here on our program, the Internet Advisor. And to those of us listening to us on our affiliates through the Talk Network in Michigan and Town Square Media, thank you very much for joining us. Glad to have you along for the ride. And we were delighted a couple weeks ago to find out that there's a whole lot of people who are listening to us on our affiliates out there. And glad to be able to offer you some fresh programming here on the Internet Advisor. Our second hour of the program is one where we try to get your questions and during the week chew on them a little bit and get some answers for you. So, number one, you got to get those questions to us. And the way you do that is by going to the homepage, internetadvisor.net. Click on that Contact Us button, and it's in the upper right-hand corner there, and send us an email with your concerns, like somebody who did for you, Ed, that you picked up. Mark was a person who got in touch with
you. I was on the wrong page there. Mark, yeah. So basically, he said, where's his... Oh, that's my answer. Where's his question?
Oh.
So I have the... Oh, Mark, there it is.
You are so good that you answered a question without even looking.
It's on the second
page. Okay, so there it is.
Yep.
He's getting basically difficulties upgrading, receiving the Microsoft Windows updates. And this is especially important now because Microsoft released that...
Creator's Edition.
Well, yeah. The Creator's Edition last week as well. And that crack attack that we were talking about was released October 10th.
So you want
silently.
Both of them.
And Microsoft are sort of sneaking those in there. But he's basically receiving an error message. I keep getting an error message, 0800737112 after I start... the install, it never gets past 14%. I hope you can answer that. And basically, what I told him is Microsoft has a lot of articles. So when I'm looking up errors in Windows operating systems, I typically use Bing, and I type in Windows Update error, and then I type the error message.
By the way, for people who don't know what Bing is...
Oh, Bing.com. That's Microsoft's search engine.
Right.
So you could Bing it instead of Google it. You know,
right. And it's, by the way, it provides sometimes quite different results or different shading of results than Google does.
Would you say that it's slightly slanted toward Microsoft?
I would say that the ads aren't touted towards, if you type in a Microsoft question on a Google, you might get more ads and confuse what you click on.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, and I get more, better Microsoft answers when I go to Bing.com. So, but basically, have you tried the following suggestions at Microsoft's website? So this error message basically sounds like the files that you attempted to download from Microsoft or that the Windows update attempted to download has become corrupted. And Microsoft has several utilities that they provide on their website that you can use to fix this. They have some fix-it utilities that you could just click on.
I love those, by the way.
That will go through and do four or five different things. Instead of reading through a manuscript, one or two pages of instructions that
And I typically will miss a step.
And you typically, absolutely, I do the same thing. It's the ADD kicking in.
Yeah.
And... I always want to skip to the end of the book, you know, find out what the results are. I can never go step one through eight. So Microsoft has Fix Windows Updates, Fix It Utility. They also have some other suggestions in there, and I sent him several links on this. One link is from a person who tried to all the Microsoft suggestions, and the computer still had the problem. Basically, the resolution suggested is to download the Windows 10 setup files onto a USB flash drive, reboot the computer so that it boots to the USB flash drive, and then reinstall Windows by running the setup, and this corrected the problem. It would not touch his original user files. It just dresses up Windows and fixes the Windows updates. Because when you run the setup files, Microsoft, the setup utility for Windows 10 will basically say, do you wish to... you know, there's like, do you wish to A, you know, install Windows and keep all your files, B, back up your files, and reinstall Windows, and or C, just erase everything and fix it, you know, and just have a clean install. So it progressively gets easier, and Microsoft sort of explains that. That's one method that you can use to correct it down. You know, if it's, I'm trying to think of the analogy, you know, how big of a stick do you need to, you know, to beat off a bear? You know, you just keep first I'll try throwing a stick at it. And maybe by the time I'm done, I'm probably going to be swinging a 12-foot 2x4. I'm still going to end up dead in the end. But that was a bad analogy. I'm not good at this.
That completely went into the weeds.
It did. I'm trying to think of an analogy. Okay. How big of a hammer do you need to pound in a nail?
Should there we go. That's a
should I use
easier.
A 10-ounce hammer? Or should I use a 16-ounce hammer, you know?
That sounds like you got that from your dad.
Yeah, well, or should I use a sledgehammer?
Use the hammer that works.
Well, what I like about that is it is the idea of being able to reinstall without touching the files.
Correct.
The existing files that a person has.
Now, another thing that, and I'm looking for the folder right now because there is a Microsoft downloads all the Windows updates, and it downloads them into a folder underneath Windows, and I'm trying to recall what it is. I thought it was called... software distribution. So this is something that we've been doing since Windows Vista.
95?
Windows Vista is Microsoft downloads all the Windows updates into a folder called C Windows and then the software distributions. So what we used to do in the old days is I would log in safe mode. And in Windows 10, you can still come up in safe mode. And then you go in there and you delete the contents of software distributions because that's where the corrupted file is. But the Microsoft Fix-It utility does that same thing for you.
I love those. It's Mr. Fix-It, I think it is. Little guy with a blue hat, I think.
No, it's a blue dress and a white hat.
There you
Not
go.
A blue dress. I'm sorry.
Blue outfit.
Blue outfit. It would be Miss Fix-It if it was a blue dress.
I think it's more of a misfit it.
Okay. Oh, dear.
Okay, and we had another question from Paul Sr.
Yes.
And
our friend in Houston.
He's in Houston. He used to live here in Bad Axe, Michigan.
Harbor Beach. Used to live.
And he basically said that he's playing solitaire. I get a message after playing some solitaire games every now and then. I tried to do Microsoft Solutions that says delete video drivers and update the video drivers. But my video card is basically on the motherboard, and I can't delete these easily. And so, because if you think about it, in the old days, we used to have desktop computers. Everyone had desktop computers.
Oh, yeah.
And I had my first portable computer I put a handle on the top of my desktop computer and toted it to my boss. And I said, I finally got my portable computer. He did not think it was funny. And then the next week I got a laptop.
Hey, whatever works.
But that's so basically in the old days, you used to have desktop computers, and a lot of the computers would ship with a cheap video card on the motherboard of the desktop, and you'd have more advanced video cards than the slots.
Yeah, right.
And that's what Paul's alluding
to. And for gamers, by the way, I think they still do that.
Correct.
They still use that that tactic of putting better cards in.
Even laptops now, they have one video card. They have multiple video cards on all laptops. But how do you delete that? So what I usually do is I find the computer icon in Windows 10 and right mouse click on it and select manage. So on your desktop, you have a computer icon.
It
used to be my computer. Right mouse click, select manage, and then you'll have a device manager. Another way of getting in there is in the Cortana search, you can just type in device manager. And it'll bring up the Windows Device Manager, and that'll show all your devices. Mm. One of the display, you got mice and keyboards and display drivers. That's the one you want to click on is the displays or video.
Display, okay.
And when you do that, you'll see the video cards. What I typically do is I just highlight them and delete. I just select it with my mouse and then strike the delete key. Microsoft will say, are you sure you wish to do this? And I say, yes. And it's going to ask me, do you wish to delete the drivers as well? And I'll say, no, you don't have to delete the drivers. Keep them on the computer.
First, I see what you're saying.
Just remove the device, reboot your computer. It'll come up. Windows will rediscover the video card, and it'll reload the same drivers. And then test it to see if the problem is resolved. If the problem is resolved, then you probably had a corrupted video driver, and Microsoft has on the reboot, Microsoft has loaded what it thinks is the best video driver for the Windows operating system. Okay, so but if Paul Sr., if this does not correct your problem, what I would recommend is Microsoft is making a mistake. It's probably updated your video driver on your computer, and what you need to do is go to the manufacturer's website that built your computer and download their video driver. This happened to my daughter right before she went to London. She got a brand new computer, and she goes, Dad, my sound isn't working properly on here. I can't, the audio jack isn't working. It worked when I bought the computer last week, but now I'm going to go on an airplane and I want to plug the audio jack. It's not working. I said, well, Microsoft must have did an update. Go to the manufacturer's website, find your computer, and download the audio software. She did that. Boom, it worked.
Hmm.
So for some reason, you have to realize that...
That's with a brand new computer.
Computer. Somehow a Microsoft update that you have to realize so many of these components are shared between so many of the different manufacturers that Microsoft has identified this component is number 265 whatever, and it's by Intel, and it's across these platforms, and so I'm going to release an update for all those users. Well, it just happened to disable the audio jack on the computer on hers, so she went back to the manufacturers.
Yep.
Boom, it fixed the problem.
Wow. So. Okay, Paul,
Foster,
go ahead.
Foster, Paul's such a good friend. We could actually give him some higher-level advice as well, don't you think? Like, you know, he can stop playing solitaire if he just find another friend.
I think they have some online games like that, too.
Paul, we got to tease you, and he does the same thing to us.
He does.
Oh, my goodness.
He didn't
blow away in the most recent hurricanes, thankfully. He had moved down to Houston to be close to family, and he moved from the shores of what must seem like tranquil Lake Huron down to the wild shores of the Gulf. Paul, I hope that helps you. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to wrap things up in our last segment talking about more of the suggestions for you. And again, the way you get your questions to us is simply by going to internetadvisor.net and the Contact Us button. You put your question in there and we will get to work on solving it and then sharing it here on our podcast. Well, guys, this has been kind of a maiden voyage for us. And Cal, first of all, thank you so much for an excellent job done engineering. Cal's been behind the controls here as we are now kind of in a new phase, Gary. We've been counting on WJR's engineers to help us get the programs recorded, and now we're kind of on our own, and I'd say Cal has done a marvelous job.
Well, I can't take all the credit. Ed helped me get set up over here. He even was smart enough to bring in some handy post-it notes so I could mark things, and we got together and made sure everything was going to work just right. So I can't take all the credit myself. It's a team effort, as always, here.
As always.
Yeah, and I think that, after 19 and three-fourths years of broadcasting, I don't think you can call anything maiden anymore. It has to be an old maid. But I do agree, Cal's done a great job at that. He's got another career if he wants it.
Yep. Thank you so much, Cal, for doing that.
I think I'll go buy a boat first.
By the way, Gary, are you planning on coming back to the Detroit area at any point sometime, you know, docking the boat, or are you going to be continuing on down there?
Well, I won't be docking the boat up there, but I'm back and forth, because I have some responsibilities for my day job up there as well. And do have a lot of family and friends in the area, so I'll be back and forth.
Well, I got to ask, Gary, because now Foster brought it up. How long would it take you to sail up here? Because you'd have to go up the coast and then come down to St. Lawrence Seaway, right?
Or up the Mississippi.
Yeah, so I won't be able to go across the Erie Canal because I'm too tall, at 22 feet tall. So I would have to go through the Welland. I'm not sure exactly, but it's called America's Great Loop, where you go up the intercoastal to Cape May in Delaware. You're about a day out in the Atlantic Ocean to get into New York Harbor, go up the Hudson, and come through the canal system. You can also go straight north through some locks and get in the St. Lawrence, or come across part of the Erie and then the Welland, and then through the Great Lakes. And then when you get around to Chicago, you go down I will not be able to go down the Chicago River, and we have a fixed bridge on the shipping canal of 19 and a half feet. So, again, I couldn't take this boat.
So he's thought about it.
Go down. But, well, it's called America's Great Loop, and it'd be a wonderful, wonderful adventure. When I bought this boat, there's no way I'll be able to do it. And there's only one facility in all of the Great Lakes that's wide enough to pull out this boat. so I couldn't do a haul out in the Great Lakes. So it's destined to be down here. You know, it's a Caribbean island boat.
You wouldn't be able to go up the Mississippi. I was just curious because that's another...
Well, you don't go up the Mississippi because of the current, but you go down it. You know, once you get out the Chicago River to the Illinois, then you can go to the Mississippi, go down the Mississippi, and then it's intercoastal from New Orleans around. Or you can go up half, about a day up the Ohio River to the Tennessee and go down the Tennessee to the Big B Cut and down to the Big B Cut all the way to Mobile Bay. So there's a number of different routes.
Wow.
But this is a well-known and well-documented, and lots of boaters do this a year. You want to spend about a year to do it.
Wow.
You don't want to be in the Great Lakes during the
He has given me some thought. That is cool.
I had a bottle of really cheap champagne to christen it with, but never mind.
you drank that anyway.
a couple of things that I found fascinating. This, you know, I like Apple. You know, I'm an Apple guy.
Okay.
But my God, I think we've finally gotten to a point where it's like, really? Really? Apple is has an offer right now that on the 23rd of October, you can check and see if you're eligible for upgrade to an iPhone 10. And in addition to checking for your eligibility, you can also see if you qualify. Are you ready for this? For a loan to purchase the iPhone.
You would need to take it out. Yes.
I can't believe that. I mean, that's just it's a phone, America. A phone. What? Loan for a phone.
A loan. They're talking above $1,000 to start with, am I right?
Yeah, easy. And you don't even get a case.
You almost need a mortgage.
So have you ordered yours yet, Gary?
You need a mortgage.
In addition to that, the other thing that I noticed out on while I was roaming on the net this week, and this is kind of a flashback for me. It takes me back to the 90s. And there used to be, and you play this on a DOS machine, and it was a game called Wolfenstein. And it's a one-shooter game where you walk through a bunch of rooms and shoot at stuff and that sort of thing. And it's really fun to play, and we played hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of it at lunchtime at work. And
lunchtime, right?
Yes, of course. They now offer the same game free of charge through a web browser, any web browser you want to use, and you can play it over the web. And I guess we'll put the link out on our website later on. That
definitely.
That sort of I think it's because they're going to be relaunching another game, Wolfenstein game.
Okay.
That's going to be 3D rendered.
Really?
Yes. And so this is why they're doing this. And I wish we had Shane in here to talk about this. I'm sure he's excited. But I remember my personal memory of we called it Wolfenstein, Steinstein. I mean, we used this whenever we were working on computers to test the memory. Because we would run all the Microsoft tests, and then we would, the motherboard manufacturer's memory test, and we just let it run overnight, and it would say, oh, the memory's fine, you know, and we'd buy and trade memory, or test between, you know, does this memory work on this motherboard, and it would pass, you know, we'd set up the operating system, and then the person would play Wolfenstein, it would crash. So we started using Wolfenstein as a way of testing the memory because it worked it so hard that within 5 minutes, if the video game played for 5 minutes, you knew the memory was good.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was great for testing it. Yeah, you tested memory. We tested video. We tested the audio.
Oh, yeah.
We tested ourselves. We just wanted to know whether or not it was working.
That's what I was doing at lunch.
Always at lunch.
Was it a shooter game?
Yeah, it was a shooter game.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then you could find little things, little pots of gold, extra, you know, bullets and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was basically one of those shooter-type games.
Yeah, one of the things that I saw on that fascinated me was that the Project Loon is now over Puerto Rico. You may have, I talked about it a little bit last week.
Yeah, that was the balloons with the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It's Alphabet, which is the company that is the parent of Google, began this as part of Google's Project X. And now it's simply, I think it's called X Lab. In any case, they inflate these balloons and then they put them up into the stratosphere and the, the object is that these, if they can get them working properly, they float over certain areas of the island and create a network that they can use for 5G internet connections. Not real fancy, you know, like texting and some other things. They are less, I'm going to say, enthusiastic about what they're accomplishing this week.
Right, but for this plot, but for the hurricane effort and what happened to Puerto Rico, that's perfect.
Absolutely. And I think it's fascinating if they can get this thing working. Apparently, they had tried it before in another situation when there had been some problems with a natural disaster. And this was the most recent attempt to get this Project Loon working. There are some kinks in it. And partly part of the kinks apparently are that the winds are pretty unpredictable. And they're
having
trouble.
I thought that was one of the reasons why they chose the stratosphere, is because it's consistent. But
apparently there are currents up there that they have to deal with in order to keep these things fairly.
And you
got to
worry about flights. You got to be, you know, no fly zones.
Yep.
And
exactly. Yep. Exactly. But I still think it's fascinating, this whole Project Loon thing, and providing.
Sounds kind of loony. But.
providing an instant response, or not an instant, but a very quick response to this very serious problem. Well, folks, thank you so much for being part of this, for us, an inaugural podcast for a new style of doing our program here. Cal, thank you again. Great job engineering. Eddie, good having you with us. Gary, thank you for being with us from down in Fort Lauderdale. And for the rest of you, thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.